Phalam Chakva Manishinaha
Janma Bandhavir Muktaha
Janma Bandhavir Muktaha
Padangachantya Namayam
Padangachantya Namayam.
Yada te moha kalilam
buddhir yati tarishyati
tada gantasi nirvedam
shrutavyasya shrutasya cha
Shanti, shanti.
Yada te moha kalilam buddhihi vyatitarishyati tada gantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. Again, these last three verses, Bhagavan is really winding up the Karma Yoga for the time being. In verse 51, our last verse that we did, that karmajam buddhiyuktahi palam tyaktva manishinaha janma bandha vinirmuktaha padam gacchati anamayam. Just to recap this so we can move into the next two. The manishinaha, the jnani, that one who has knowledge, tyaktva, having given up, karma pala. First, that these two words go together. First of all, karmajam palam go together. Karmajam palam tyaktva. Then, buddhiyuktaha manishinaha. These two go together. The jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, right? Being a buddhiyukta, one who has that samatha buddhi, one for whom that karma yoga buddhi is natural, who receives everything with that prasada buddhi, giving that person that samatha, that state of equipoise, no matter what is happening out here, because it really doesn't have anything to do with what's happening out here in terms of your raga dvesha. It has to do with the way you receive the results of your actions. How do you receive them? If you receive them as prasada, then that puts the mind in a particular state. It's just like in the temple, and for prasada, if you get water, or you get a little piece of leaf, or a little bit of chandas, or a laddu, or a whole meal, it's the prasada, it is the relationship with Ishwara that I am responding to. I'm really responding to the object of the prasada. What is actually Bhagavan's giving me, it's that Bhagavan's giving it to me. That's the difference. Bhagavan's giving it to me. So with that shraddha and with that love and with that commitment, I receive that. And so for such a person, with that buddhi, then the pala, the karma pala, the fruit of one's action, born of karma, that is given up, right? The fruits of the action are given up. What I'm getting back, as terms of what I'm actually getting back, that's not what I'm really responding to. I accept that with equal poise because I'm accepting it as prasad. So what is giving me that shanti is that prasada buddhi. And because I'm engaged with Ishwara much more than I'm engaged with the karmapala. I'm engaged with Ishwara because I'm a mumukshu. because I've already recognized the limitations of karmapala, completely understood those limitations. And so what I really want, I want self-knowledge, I want knowledge of Bhagavan, why I'm here, what I'm doing here, what is happening, you know. And I want knowledge of myself. I want to be free. And so now that this teaching is taking place, I'm actually find myself, even as I'm a mumukshu, before I have any jnana nishtha or anywhere close, I am getting what I want. So when somebody mumukshu comes to Vedanta, it's a huge relief. It's like finally someone is saying what you've been waiting to hear, and as you hear it, it's though you've always known it, but nobody has said it. Yeah? Now it is being said, and so my mind, my being, my life has a totally different disposition. My disposition now is totally toward Bhagavan and toward gaining this knowledge. And if my mind behaves otherwise, that's a prasada. But that's not what I mean to say, but actually that's... I do take all of that as prasad, but that's my sadhana. Sadhana prasada, sadhana prasada. Sadhana, this is I love this attitude where the things that cause me pain, you know, those things are also given to me by Bhagavan, right? The things that cause me pain, I take those as prasad, because those things become my sadhana. And every time I'm able for these things that I'm actually have some sort of raga dvesha relationship with, like it or not, I just do. I want it to be different. I want you to be different. I want this karmapala to be different in some way. That just comes, brings my knowledge right up to my face, you know. So this particular instance, you know, that karma yoga buddhi is not there, the jnanam is not there, the raga dvesha is there. That's, okay, in this area. This is my sadhana. This is where I have to do some vichara. Vichara means analysis. I have to bring my knowledge into this area. Either that, or just because of my experience, I know there's a little one inside. You know, there's a little one inside who is still feeling hurt, who still needs some attention. That's my sadhana. You know, but in any case, that where in order for me to be happy, I can, on a practical level, want things to be different. I need to change this or to try to make this a little better for myself and for others. That's objective, you know. Like, the house is dirty. I need to clean it. We'll all be a lot happier with a clean house. I prefer it to be clean, so I'll clean it, you know. But that's objective, you know. What about, nobody's cleaning the house? Nobody's helping me. Oh, these kind of places that we can go, whatever it is, you know. That's sadhana. Okay, then. You don't feel like you're being helped. You don't feel like you're cared for. Is that what it is? Yes. Yeah. I be with that. That's fine. Sadhana. So you start to see your raga dvesha is also a sadhana, and you see that you see it as sadhana is a great prasad. Changes your attitude, because really I'm only here for my knowledge. That's what I'm doing with my life. If that's not what I'm doing with my life, I'm not really a mumukshu. So then there's no problem. We have to go out and become a mumukshu. A little bit more burning at the stake. You know, a little bit more experience is necessary to realize that my ananda is not something external for me to achieve. It is not. We experience it over and over and over again. I get the achievement. I don't get what the achievement was supposed to give me. I want this so that I can be happy. It means I want to be happy. And any type of external achievement is going to be an external achievement. It can be a positive thing. It can make my life simpler. All of these things. But it is not going to give what I'm seeking. What I'm seeking is my own self. And so, for the manishinaha, the person who has this mature, buddhi yukta, has this karma yoga buddhi, having given up karma pala, the pala born of karma, then for that person, janma bandha vinamuktaha, there is no, there's a complete release from the bondage of birth and death. So I want to talk just a little bit more about that. There's complete release from the bondage of birth and death. Because in gaining self-knowledge, I recognize my being is free of birth and death. That's true here, right now. I recognize that this me, this I, is not coming into being, it's not going out of being, I always am. So right now itself, me, the very personal me that I've always taken to be me, I recognize is free of this, what we call anyonya adyasa, this mutual superimpositions, that I am this body, I am this mind, I am this body-mind complex. I've been born and I've died, I've taken birth after birth after birth after birth. That's true from the standpoint of the subtle body, right? Taken birth after birth after birth after birth. But you are the self of the subtle body, right? You're the self of the one that's transmigrating. And that self, that is me, is not transmigrating, is not taking birth, is never changing in any way. In fact, it's myself that is ever present to every moment. I am the one who is present to every moment. For me, there's no birth and death. And that is going to be true now, while you're living, and it's also true when this body drops, when the prarabdha runs out and you lose this body. At that time, the subtle body, all the components of the subtle body, they also go back to their respective elements. The five elements, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, which is their material cause. The subtle body itself disperses back into Ishvara because there's no ahankara, there's no ajnanam there to keep it going. There's no one identifying with it, you know, to look after it or kind of hold it together as one entity. Now I'm going to travel on. The ahankara is not there even, that ahankara is not there even while you're living. While you're living, your mind is with yourself, with your being, the aham. The ahankara is mitya, the body is mitya, the sukshma sharira is mitya. There's no glue to keep it going. What was the glue really is raga dvesha. I want this so that I can be happy. I want this so that I can be happy. Let's go. Let's have this next life. I'm accruing karma pala. I'm ready. I'm ready to take my next birth. I am looking outward. Whereas for jnani, the looking outward is mitya. The draw for my buddhi is the atma. The draw is the atma. Reason really? It's because just like, you know, and this is an example actually they use in the Shastra, just as, you know, moths, you know, those little moths, like little butterflies, they will all go toward the light, right? That's what attracts them. We all go toward the light too. We all, for us, the light here is ananda. We go toward ananda. If we think the ananda is that object, we go toward that. We think it's that object, we go toward that. That's where our heart is. We're actually, our heart is going always toward my own being, the ananda, which is actually me. What happens when my mind finds that? When it discovers the source, and that source happens to me, is it going to be going that way or this way? Say it goes this way, because that's where the love is. That's where the ananda is. And that is all that I really want. I want this, 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 infinitely this, 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 so that I can be happy. But what about when I recognize the ananda is my own being? And then I am that ananda. When this body drops, the body goes back to its the physical elements, the sukshma sharira goes back to its subtle elements, and I abide as Ishvara. That's the padam gacchanti anamayam. I go to that pada which is Brahman, which is myself. And in that self, there is no strife. There is no problem. Bhagavan gave us a little break in terms of this creation. He gave us deep sleep. in deep sleep, just want you to kind of appreciate the beauty of this, the beauty of deep sleep. Because even though we have ajnanam, ignorance, self-ignorance, right? And that is, until we know myself, that is kind of all ever-present in the mind until it's gone. It's just ever-present. When the mind goes into deep sleep, really, it itself is going into its causal condition. And so all that is there for me at the time of sleep is that deep sleep where there is no subject-object relationship. There's no karta, there's no doer, there's no bhokta, there's no field of experience to deal with. In fact, all of that is resolved. And it is resolved where? You can say in its causal condition, but then where is its causal condition? Where does its causal condition abide? Only in me, right? The whole universe is mithya. It's like the pot to the clay. And so when the whole mind goes into that causal condition, meaning there's no experience of duality, I am just myself without any problem whatsoever. It's myself with ajnana, right? And then when the mind comes back out, it says, oh, wow, I slept so well. You know, I didn't know one thing. I didn't know a thing. And I'm so happy to have had that time out where I didn't know anything and I wasn't even there. Right? There was no ahankara, there was no subject-object relationship, ananda. That total ignorance is total bliss. Right? Ignorance is bliss. It's a wonderful thing. If it's total ignorance. And so Bhagavan gave us this. That deep sleep is important. That's why we all crave it. And if you have a sleep problem, you want to fix that. Because I need that total timeout where I can totally check out. But I'm not checking out into non-existence. I'm checking out to ananda. I'm checking out to me. And so it's the most wonderful kind of time of the day. One friend, Edward, who sometimes if you listen to the tapes, you're always hearing Edward ask these questions, you know. I just laugh. He always asks. He's usually the first guy to ask questions. Sometimes he will say, many times he said, my favorite time of the day is deep sleep. He's not kidding. You know, because he says, when I'm awake, I have all of these worries, you know. He has all these responsibilities and all of these worries. And when I go to sleep, those are all gone. He says, deep sleep and shravana, these two things. They're gone when I'm listening to the teaching. No, there's no problem. And when I'm asleep, no problem. But in between, I just have so many problems. Yeah. Yeah. I understand. Beautiful. So, that manishinaha goes to that pada. Goes, remember I said that going, there's no going. Right? But there's a sense of going because the mind itself, instead of going out here, it resolves into its own being. So it goes into that pada, that place of anamayam, the place of Brahman. There's no place there, right? The whole universe exists in Brahman, so it's not like there's a place. But in reference to being out here, or landing here, or landing here, landing here, this pada, this pada, this pada, I'm landing on this pada, the pada of my own being, which is anamayam, which in which there is no distress or no hurt. And so that being so, that he's talking about the jnani, then he says to Arjuna, I think the question is kind of like, okay, now, again, how do you have to, what do you need to do to get there? You know. So he says to these two verses, he says to Arjuna, yada, when, moha kalilam buddhihi vyakirishati vi ati. These are the two upasargas, two prepositions. Vi ati tarishati. Taratre means to cross over. You know the word avatara, the avatar? That means tre, means to cross, to cross down. So Bhagavan is coming down into the creation, avatara. So tre means to cross. And here, via, the V plus ati is vyati. V ati, vyati. So, vyati tarishati. when the buddhihi, namata, when the buddhihi crosses in its own view, in its own very particular way, and ati is completely, when it completely crosses over, when so te buddhihi, when you're buddhi, when it completely crosses over this moha kalilam. Kalilam means like the impurity or confusion. Moha kalilam, this confusion that is brought about by atma, anatma, viveka, aviveka. And aviveka, a lack of discrimination between me, the self, and what is anatma, not me. There's a confusion, this born of ajnanam, born of ignorance. This confusion we call atma, anatma, aviveka. Atma, anatma, viveka means there's a discrimination between who I am and what the objects of experience are. For an ajnani, that viveka is not there. The viveka is like this. My viveka is, okay, this is me, the subject, right here. This body, mind, sense organs is me, and everything else is not me, right? So that's the level of viveka. I am this body, mind, sense organs, and I am not you. That's my discrimination. It's me and the world. Okay? But that's not the viveka of a jnani. That's not where the line of discrimination between subject and object, I am this, you know, and you are all that. You are all the anatma. No. For the jnani, when we use the word viveka, this is not the line between subject and object. Because I recognize this body itself is an object of my experience. This body goes over to the line that goes on the other side of the line between subject and object. I recognize this body is experienced by five sense organs. This goes on the other side of the line. It's an object. My sense organs are experienced by my mind. They're instruments which I'm aware of. Sense organs go on the other side of the line, right? My mind, my emotions, and my moods, they are experienced by me, right? Actually, the mind is something which the vrittis themselves, being sattva, they are illumined, they are known. That means they're objectified, you know? The vrittis come and go. When they are here, they are known. When they're gone, they're gone. So these vrittis, these experiences that I have, they also have to go on the other side of the line. They become objects. The ahankara itself, I am doing this, I am feeling that, that's a vritti that you're aware of. That goes on the other side of the line. Space you're aware of, that goes on the other side of the line. All your relations you're aware of, that goes on the other side. All the knowledge that you've accrued, that you're aware of, that goes on the other side of the line. Even your ignorance you're aware of. Like if I say, do you know Chinese? Probably nobody here does. They'll say, no, no, I don't. No, I don't know Chinese. How do you know you don't know Chinese? Because I know what I know and I know what I don't know, right? I'm the one that illumines my knowledge and my ignorance. That goes on the other side of the line. What doesn't go on the other side of the line? What is there that's not anatma? What is there? Anatma means not me. Anything that I can objectify, that I can have a subject-object relationship with, that becomes anatma. What is left? What is left? Only me. Only me. The conscious being me. But who is that? Who is that? Because everything I've taken to be me is on the other side of the line. Right? So I'm naked. Who is left? I have no dresses. I'm not wearing anything. I'm not wearing the body. I'm not wearing the sense organs. I'm not wearing my thoughts, I'm not wearing my buddhi, I'm not wearing my mind, I'm not wearing my emotions, I'm not even wearing the ahankara. Those all are on the other side of the line. And what is on the other side of the line? The Ishvara Upadhi. Everything that's objectifiable within time and space is on the other side of the line, so to speak, right? And so this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Bhagavan. Just like if you look at the world, you see, oh, look at all of the trees and all of the plants and all of the animals. Look at the beautiful sky and the sun and at night the stars, you know, and the moon. All of these things, they belong to the creation. This is the creation. You know, we would say, yes, this creation, this is the creation that exists within space with so many billions of stars. This is our creation. Say, this creation is Ishwara. Right? From a Vedantic standpoint, this creation itself exists in conscious being. But that's not the point right now. The point is that for me, all of these things are part of the creation. And then I recognize that everything about me, too, belongs to that creation. Just like I say, this is all part of the creation. And, of course, I'm looking at all of you, too. You are all part of the creation. You exist in this creation. I don't often think that I exist in the creation as something that's objectified, but I am also part of the creation. I'm also part of Ishwara. And so the problem, you know, for the buddhi that has no self-knowledge, I don't realize that. Somehow that eludes me. Because my mind, because of that ignorance, it is always just assumed that I am the conscious being, because there's no time when I'm awake and interacting with you, that I'm not the conscious being. And so I am the subject, you are the object, and you are the subject, everything is the object. You are the subject, everything is the object. That's how it works. That's the moha kalilam, that the buddhi, you know, the buddhi has to cross. The buddhi has to cross over that. Atma anatma. Confusion, that moha, that in what we call that impurity, you know, or that confusion that we call moha. The confusion, the delusion is that myself, that the me, is this. But actually this body, mind, sense organs, the ahankara, belongs with the rest of the creation. Belongs to Ishwara, part and parcel. Like, and when you have a dream, it's not as though the one in the dream doesn't belong to the dream. Right? The character you're identified with in the dream belongs to the dream. That's a really obvious thing. Okay? And when you wake up from the dream, that character goes along with the dream. In fact, one thing that often we don't realize, and that the dream is such a beautiful example of, space itself belongs to the dream. It's space. You don't have a dream without space. All five elements belong to the dream. All of the rajas, all of the activity belongs to the dream. All of the subject-object relationships belong to the dream. Every character belongs to the dream, part and parcel. It's part of a much bigger story. Your dream, part of a much bigger story. Same with your imagination. Space, air, fire, water, earth, a subtle level, that belongs to the imagination. All of the characters in the imagination belong to the imagination. You know? You're the Ishwara of the imagination. You're the Ishwara of the dream. Right? Because the dream comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. When the dream goes away, nothing has happened to you. In fact, because the dream is mithya, nothing has happened. And that's your experience. It can be the most real dream, nothing has happened. You have an imagination, you're lost in the imagination for some time, daydreaming. You wake up from that imagination, nothing has happened. You imagine there are lots of things going on in the imagination, but nothing has happened because the imagination is mithya. Same situation here. This infinite universe, you know, with all of its laws and all of its beauty, all of its mathematics, all of its science, all of its order, you know, and this universe is here, you know, with this body, mind, sense organs. Here I am, this incredible experience. When it goes into pralaya, when it goes into unmanifest condition, nothing has happened. Why? Because dream is mithya, imagination is mithya, this universe is mithya. It's a bigger joke, as Swamiji will laughingly say. It's a bigger joke. It lasts longer. Okay? But the mithyatva, that it is mithya, is exactly the same. It's not a different mithya. Mithya is mithya. Mithya means it depends totally upon the Atma, the self, for its being. Whether it's a dream, an imagination, or this entire creation, it is mithya. But I am in this mithya. Here I am, this body, mind, sense organs. I'm part of that creation, Bhagavan's creation, this upadhi. And so just like the dream character is looking around, experiencing the very real dream world and takes itself to be that, I take myself, the being, the one from whom this entire creation has come, to be this. Because my body never is not, my mind is never without me. And so why would I not? That's the moha kalila. The buddhi has to cross over that. So he says, when, yada, when your buddhihi, yada te buddhihi, vyati tarishati, crosses over this moha, this delusion, which is really atma from Shankara, atma, anatma, aviveka, a lack of discrimination between myself, my being, and the myself and my not self. So, but when that aviveka is removed, when I have that discrimination, tada, then gantasi nirveda. Then he says to Arjuna, then you will gain, you will go to nirveda. Nirveda means vairagya. It's a synonym of vairagya. Then you will gain that dispassion naturally for everything that you've heard. I told you about this. I'd heard that this would really be wonderful. If I could just get that, I think that would do it for me. I've heard about it. I want it. Okay. So everything that I've heard, there'll be a natural nirveda, a natural vairagya for that. And not only that, for everything that I may hear in the future, shrota vyaha, everything that can be heard, that is available to be heard in the future. You know, like say in 2 or 3 months or next year, somebody tells me about something and I think, wow, okay, that would be wonderful. I don't know if that's going to happen, but say when it does, if it does, then I find myself, I really want that. So he says, no. Whatever is available for you to find out about now, and whatever is available for you to find out about later in the future, that nirveda, that vairagya, will definitely be there. When that because that problem has been solved, because of the viveka, once I recognize that the atma, my being, the ananda itself, cannot be objectified, no, nor do I ever experience it as an object, I can gain absolute clarity on that fact. If any object had the ananda, we would all be going after it. And if it had the ananda and I happened to get it and I could just keep it with myself, I would always be happy because I would have that ananda with me. I might be very, very, very protective of it, but, you know, because, you know, I don't want anybody to take it away. You know, but if I have it, I will be happy. There is no such experience. I have it. I'm happy for 15, 20, 30, 20 seconds, whatever it is, you know. And I still keep the object. But the ananda that I'm seeking eludes me. How many millions or billions of times have we had that experience? Because there's no exception to it. Ananda, and there's so many stories we can say about it. Any given moment of happiness, any object that has become given you some happiness at any given time is maybe giving another person sorrow and giving other people nothing, just absolute indifference. It has nothing to do with my ananda. Doesn't mean anything to me. Other people, this has been a real source of pain. You know, your relationships like that. This person made me so happy, and now he is such a source of pain. Right? For me, he was a source of ananda. Then he was a huge source of pain. And before I met him, I was totally indifferent to him. And if I outgrow that pain, he can become an object of indifference. On the other hand, you know, a person who is a great source of joy to me could be a great source of pain to you. Yeah? Some person, I'm in love with this person, I'm so happy. But the one that he left behind and divorced is really unhappy. And what? How do the other people feel? Nothing. They could care less. And so there is really any object, any person, anything that you hold up is sometimes a source of joy to you, can be also equally a source of pain to you, and it can be a source of great indifference to you. Swamiji likes to use, you know, items in a garage sale. You give a garage sale and there's a lot of stuff to give away. All stuff that at one point you really liked. You got it because you really wanted this thing. You know? And then within a short period of time it just becomes another item on the shelf or whatever. And then it starts cluttering your house. And then you have to give it away. That's what we experience in every way, every conceivable way. That is how we experience ananda. It is momentary. It's projected onto the object. The object really has nothing to do with it in terms of its locus. So then you may have had the thought when we were, before you really came to knowledge, like, it's slipping away and how can I get it back? You were so happy, you know, something made you so happy, and you know it, and you're so happy, and then it slips away and you kind of want to kind of get it, see if you can get it back. And nope, it keeps going right through your fingers and gone. Okay. So then you want to know, where is that ananda? Where is it? It's not here, but I have it. I have the experience of it, and then it eludes me. Where is that ananda? That's what has to be discovered, you know. And when I discover that it really is my own being. It's not subject to any type of objectification. That's the discovery. Then no matter what I've heard before or what is offered to me later, you know, that I haven't heard, I had the vairagya, because anything that's offered to me that exists within time and space is not going to be that ananda. That's going to be something that exists within time, is unobjectifiable, right? And something that I can't, no longer am superimposing myself onto. So it doesn't even matter if the whole universe is offered to me. The whole universe is mitya. What am I going to look at this huge thing, you know? Look at this huge thing and I think, this is too big. That's what happened to Arjuna. He said, Bhagavan, the 11th verse, chapter, I think, Bhagavan, please let me see your whole swarupa. Let me see the whole creation, let me experience that. Krishna thought, okay. Let's see what he does. Okay, I'll show it to you. As a blessing, yes, blessing, yes, I'll show you. So he showed Arjuna, so Arjuna got to really have the experience of the whole Ishvara Swarupa. And he was totally scared and totally overwhelmed. And he's saying, seeing this, he goes, Krishna, Bring me back. Then he says, let me see the form that I know. Let me see you in the form that I know. So Bhagavan brought him back and let him see. That's good. Okay. That is a huge, huge relief. And anyway, so Tadagantasi Nirvedam Shrotavyasya Shrutasya Cha. One other part of this verse that's so important is that I think, okay, now I'm totally enraptured with moksha, the idea of moksha, and I'm gaining this knowledge. But later on, somebody might come up with a better idea, you know, something better. And I can leave this moksha behind, you know, and run after that. Couldn't that happen? Krishna says, no. Whatever is heard now in the past, or whatever can possibly be heard in the future, that vairagya will remain. Because either you're going to hear about the very source of ananda, which is free from time, which is my own being, which can never come and go, which is exactly what moksha is, or you're going to hear about something in the creation, which is mitya. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be anything. Any huge thing can be offered. It is mitya. It's objectifiable. It does not contain ananda. Right? Because being mitya, everything within the creation is as time-bound. It comes into being, it goes out of being. As I analyze it, in fact, there's nothing there. And again, I'm looking outward. There's that subject-object relationship. Unless they're offering you, yourself, there's nothing that can compare. They're offering something that exists within time and space, comes into being, therefore, and time and space means the whole Ishwara Swarupa. They're offering something that comes into being and goes out of being, is bound by time. The mere fact that it comes into being and goes out of being means that that offering, right, is bordered by non-being, by non-existence. Therefore, it is mitya. No matter what, it is mitya. Mitya means it depends 100% on being itself. Right? On being itself. I am that being. There's nothing that you're going to be able to offer, right, that is outside of samsara, outside of mitya. And so once that viveka is there, that atma anatma viveka, there's nothing that can surpass that or replace it. Because everything that exists within time and space on every level, on every loka, that is mitya. It is not the source of the ananda. The ananda is projected upon it. So anyway, this is, we're going to see this in 1,000 ways over the whole Vedanta Satyam Mitya. Then he says, you want to do the next verse?
Shruti vi pratipannate
yadastasyati nischala samadha vachala buddhihi tada yogam avapsyasi.
Shruti vi pratipannate yada stasyati nischala samadhau achala buddhihi tada yogam avapsyasi. So here it says te buddhihi, buddhi is in the second line, te buddhihi yada te buddhihi, when your buddhi, which is shruti vipratipanna, which is distracted by the shruti, because the shruti, in the sense, shruti stands for all of the things I could want. The shruti is through its karmas, you could have this, you could have this, you could go to Swargaloka, you could go to Indraloka, you could have all the type of power you want, you do the proper rituals and upasanas, you can have what you want. But we have so many particular visheshik karmas, these kriya visheshas, these very unique karmas that can get you what you want. If you want a family, if you want a child, you can have a child. Say you're having trouble having a child, we'll do these rituals for you, you can have a child. Say you want to have a tremendous amount of wealth, you can do these rituals, these karmas, you can have that wealth, attract that wealth. So the Veda says all of these flowery words, what do you want? Maybe you want to go to a loka, maybe you want to have a child, maybe you want to have a long and healthy life. We have karmas for you, or whatever it is. That's the Veda Pratipanna. You become very distracted by these offerings. So he's using the Vedas, but we all become distracted by these very, all of these offerings that the creation has to give. Here, how about this one, this one, this one, this one. All of the billions of possibilities, you know. You can have this, you can have this, you can have this at my ananda, you can have ananda, you can have ananda, you can have ananda. That's what it is. Ananda, ananda, ananda. Yeah. So, when the buddhi is no longer distracted by the shruti, by the Vedas, or by these offerings of ananda, these offerings of what I will say, mityananda, right? It's mityananda. You're going after the mitya, which has for itself the ananda. Nityananda. Okay, so when the buddhi has gained knowledge and sees through all of that, then stasyasi, that buddhi, stasyasi nischala. The buddhi who had been totally you know, enamored by all of that, when that buddhi, when one is left by that behind, the one that had been like that, when it becomes stasyati nischala, your buddhi will become something which is steady. It is free from any type of agitation. It just remains steady without nischala. Chala means agitation or movement. Nischala, it means it becomes steady. Then it says, and that buddhi samadhau achala. That buddhi remains. Chala means moves. Achala means it doesn't move. It remains samadhau, in samadhi. In samadhi here, that place where into which everything resolves, Shankara gives the breakdown of this, the vigraha of this. It means it resolves into the atma. So when the buddhi just remains steady in the self, achala, it remains firmly situated in my own being. Because we're all chasing ananda. And when I find it, then I don't want to leave it. It's like when you find love, when you feel loved, you don't want to go away. But to me, the word being loved is what it is, ananda. That which is the most beloved to all of us is to feel loved. And that is the very swarupa, the very nature of yourself. And so when the buddhi discovers that, I am loved, I am whole, I am complete. Because I am loved is a big deal, you know. I feel loved. We say it in different ways. I feel loved, I feel wanted, I feel cared for. I am loved. So when the buddhi discovers that, so samadhau, as my very nature, I am that, it has discovered the source of being loved, do you think it wants to leave? Being loved, you know, so the buddhi absorbed in my own being, then because you're here and you're alive, you do hear what is to be done. You know? But there's no kartritvam. The kartritvam, that doership, is just mithya. Lost in really my own ananda, then I live my life from that. And then that's why for somebody who's very mature in their knowledge, like our Swamiji, and people sit around him, they're all like this. Yeah. When you go to see Swamiji, remember I told you, if you take a problem there, you should write it down. We used to all write it down. Because once we would get there and sit with Swamiji, we can't even remember what the problem was. Because my mind has resolved into that ananda. His ananda is so strong, you know, that it's infectious. You know, and so your whole mind just becomes that ananda, and you just don't want to have to leave. You just want to stay there. Because you're projecting onto Swamiji's making me like that. And I'm so happy and so full. No, I don't want to leave. Let me stay just one more minute, Swamiji. You know, sometimes everybody's sitting in, you know, around him, and everybody's so, it's this big smile on their face, you know. Used to look around and say, and I had one on my face too. We all did. You know, what is that? Such a beautiful thing. That's yourself. And when your mind, you know, gains this antakarana shuddhi, this karma yoga buddhi from this prasada buddhi, it works through all of these things. It gains that viveka, you know, where I'm not any longer projecting my being onto the world. It's just not happening. Then I just totally enjoy myself. And so that buddhi now, just with me, lost in my own self, as though lost, then that buddhi yogam avapsasi. That buddhi attains yoga. Here it's not karma yoga. Yoga can mean karma yoga. It can also mean jnanam. It can be atma jnanam is the yoga. The ultimate yoga, the karma yoga, resolves into jnanam, into knowledge. So here this yoga means knowledge. That buddhi, once all of these things are clear, gains that yoga, which is what? Yoga which is with myself through knowledge. I gain that union with myself, which is actually the yoga. It is actually the yoga. The union with myself is a viyoga. Viyoga means a separation from that false, those false projections, a separation from my identity with anatma. So the yoga is actually viyoga. And the gain of knowledge is actually what we call ajnana nivritti. It's an elimination of ignorance. There is no gain of knowledge. I'm already completely here. There's some ajnanam. I'm not going to have a new experience to gain it. I'm going to remove the ignorance which has caused my mind to superimpose me upon it. Right? But I am always here. So I'm not going to have a gain of myself. The self is already present, is already me. But my mind, that when the ignorance is removed, recognizes that viveka between myself and it. It is mitya. I am its being. I'm a different order of reality. Nothing ever happens to me, and now that becomes very clear. And so, once that karma yoga buddhi does its job, right? Once that karma yoga buddhi, that prasada buddhi, is mature, then knowledge that I'm gaining at the time of teaching flowers completely, right? So he says, then I attain really the yoga, that yoga which is viyoga, that yoga which is really the elimination of my ajnana that has caused me to take myself to be the anatma, and therefore keep projecting my ananda, myself, my being onto it. So that then, when that happens, when the shruti, the distractions of the shruti are no longer distractions for you, when the vairagya is complete because you have really recognized that I am what I seek, I am the one that I am seeking, and I really recognize that, then my mind really settles down and becomes achala. Achala means it becomes steady, it becomes free of any motion. It just is there with me, always. It's always there with me, and then looking out into the world, right? I bless the world. It's true. For the one who is mature, I bless the world. My being blesses the world because that buddhi is enjoying what everyone wants. And there's no kartrit tvam, there's only Brahman, there's only Ishwara. Very beautiful. So after this has been said, Arjuna has some questions. Like, okay, when I get there, you know, when I become like that, you know, because he says, when, say Arjuna, when, you know, your mind becomes like this, you know, when these distractions, you can have this, when all these distractions have settled down and your buddhi is just really rooted, steady in your own being, then you achieve that jnanam. Then you gain that jnanam, that yoga. So then Arjuna, so when that happens, that hasn't happened for him yet, you know, so then what will I be like? That's his question. When I'm like that, when I'm a sannyasi, when I'm like that, you know, a wise person like that, you know, what will that be like? How will I walk? How will I sit? How will I stand? All of these questions he asks, right? And so Krishna, understanding the spirit of his question, answers him in several verses, just describing the wise person. This particular portion is often our favorite portion of the Gita. So nice to hear. Just a description of the jnani. So we'll do that. Start that tomorrow.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harih Om.